Now, after recent mass shootings in Texas and Ohio and other gun violence around the country, some major retailers are taking steps aimed at curbing the problem. 2 weeks ago, 22 people were shot and killed at an El Paso Walmart in the surrounding area. In July, a disgruntled Walmart employee in Mississippi killed two coworkers and injured a police officer. On Tuesday, Walmart said it would no longer sell short-barrel rifle ammunition and announced it would ban the sale of handguns in Alaska, the last place it allowed them to be sold. And Walmart, as well as Kroger's and now CVS and Walgreens, are asking customers not to openly carry in their stores, even in states where it's legal. In a statement, Walmart CEO Doug McMillon said, quote, "We've been listening to a lot of people inside and outside our company as we think about the role we can play in helping to make the country safer. It's clear to us that the status quo is unacceptable." Here in Wisconsin, the latest Marquette University Law School poll shows voters strongly support background checks on all gun sales, but whether state or federal lawmakers pursue such legislation remains to be seen. Robert Spitzer is a distinguished service professor and chair of the Political Science Department at the State University of New York at Cortland. His books include The Politics of Gun Control. Bob, welcome back to the show.
It's good to be with you.
Well, we've talked a lot over the years about federal and state gun policies. I don't know if we've talked about retail stores weighing in on this. What do you make of this trend, apparently, big chains changing their firearm policies?
Well, this is an interesting step, but it's not a new idea. It's not something I think we've talked about before, but this has been bubbling around really for several years. You can go back to the early part of this decade when a mother's group decided to organize and put economic pressure on various chain restaurants, stores, places like Starbucks, Target, other places, for one thing, to get them to stop allowing people to carry weapons legally in their places of business. Because even if you live in a state where it's legal to carry a gun either concealed or open carry, places of business have a right to prevent you from entering their places of business. And what typically occurs in other states is that you put a sign in the window saying, you know, no gun carrying in our store, and that's perfectly allowable. Walmart taking this step is significant. It's certainly a huge national retailer. They have, I think, something like 4,600 stores across the country, and the people who own and run Walmart, they're, you know, politically kind of on the conservative side, and business people tend to be generally conservative and cautious in the most general sense. So the fact that they're taking these steps, I think, is significant. They have done some other things in the past along these lines. Back in 2015, Walmart stopped selling assault rifles, but they didn't make a real big deal about it. And a final interesting thing, there was I saw some survey results today or yesterday that reported that the public had a positive feeling about Walmart taking these steps. And my guess is that Walmart and many other companies that have moved along these lines have pre-tested these things. And they know that the public at large is generally sympathetic to these measures because they're not, after all, in the business of politics per se. They're in the business of commercial business, commercial enterprise. But they do have a conscience. They are looking around at what's happening. And of course, as you mentioned in your setup, Walmart was the site of one of the shootings in Texas at the beginning of August. And 2 days before that, two of their managers in Mississippi were shot and killed. So this is right at the doorstep of Walmart as well.
The National Rifle Association responded to this Walmart decision. They said in a Facebook post, quoting, "It is shameful to see Walmart succumb to the pressure of the anti-gun elites. Lines at Walmart will soon be replaced by lines at other retailers who are more supportive of America's fundamental freedoms." Does the NRA have that kind of sway over not voting now, but on where people shop?
Well, I don't think very much. They certainly are. Their message is received by their members and those who, you know, follow the NRA point of view. But in terms of
We're losing our connection with Robert Spitzer. We'll try bringing him on in another way, maybe via phone. We're talking to Robert Spitzer. His books include The Politics of Gun Control. looking at some of the most recent news after the latest round of mass shootings in places around the country. We've been talking about retailers changing their firearm policies, including asking customers not to openly carry firearms in their stores. In just a few minutes, we're going to talk about public opinion on gun laws and whether there is a chance to change laws on things like background checks, assault weapon bans, red flag laws at the state or federal level. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email your thoughts, ideas@WPR.org. We'll come back to that conversation in just a few minutes here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with political scientist and gun policy expert Robert Spitzer from the State University of New York at Cortland. We're talking about renewed pushes for gun control measures after multiple mass shootings in recent weeks. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think it's going to take to reduce gun violence? Are expanded background checks and red flag laws part of the solution? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Robert, we were talking earlier about the influence of the National Rifle Association. They have had some internal difficulties and friction that maybe some people are saying affect their political influence. What's going on there?
Yeah, they have. They really are being besieged from all sides. They suffered politically after the 2018 midterm elections when a lot of candidates around the country campaigned on an expressly pro-gun safety agenda and were elected as if to say, look, you guys don't scare us anymore, meaning the NRA. They have severe financial problems, and there's been a lot in the news about that stuff. Some very extravagant spending. They severed their ties with their advertising firm, Alexander McQueen, that they'd been doing business with for over 40 years. I mean, in 2017 alone, though, they paid them $40 million to do, you know, whatever it is that they did for them. And they've now severed that tie. They're in expensive, nasty litigation with them. The New York State Attorney General's office is investigating them. They've subpoenaed people. There are congressional investigations, a lot of financial questions. Their tax status is being examined, possible ties with Russia, and did they funnel money from the Russians to the 2016 political campaigns, which if they did, is strictly illegal. So they've got an awful lot of bad stuff going on for them, and some of it, frankly, is just their own fault, money mismanagement. But the messaging to the gun rights community, of course, continues, and those people are still in Wisconsin and all around the country, and they still have their beliefs and will express them as they had before. But in terms of the NRA as a funding organization providing big money to candidates running for office coming up to 2020, in terms of lobbying activities, traditional activities, they're just not going to have the resources to do it. There's no way they can spend the kind of money in 2020 that they did in 2016. And they're just not going to be sitting at the table with the other big money players, especially for President Trump and others. So that's a big, big problem for them.
Before we go to our callers, we have a new polling from the Marquette University Law School. We talked about that on the show yesterday. 80% of Wisconsin voters support background checks on all firearm sales. That includes most gun owners as well. Red flag law is getting a lot of support. During a news conference last week, Governor Tony Evers said he's leaning toward calling a special session of the legislature to take up gun control measures. Here's a listen.
It's going to be a matter of time if we come to the conclusion that the Republicans aren't going to come into session and do something proactive, such as something that 80% of the people of Wisconsin want, and that's universal background checks, we'll have a special session.
So we have a Democratic governor, Republican control of the legislature. What are you watching for in states like Wisconsin, Bob?
Well, Wisconsin really is kind of a testing ground. Measures like red flag laws have spread across the country. There are, I believe, now 17 states that have enacted them, and that includes pretty conservative states with conservative governors in some cases. Universal background checks is a measure that everybody, you know, virtually everybody supports. The idea is that around 22% of all gun sales occur without any background check because they're between private individuals. And obviously those individuals could be people like the recent shooter in Texas who was denied the ability to buy a gun legally, and he wound up buying it through a private, no background check sale. I mean, that's kind of an exemplar of the sort of problem that can arise. So these are measures, and even President Trump, who's really waffled all over the place on where he really stands on gun measures, has at various times indicated support for strengthened background checks and even the idea of red flag laws and other things. Of course, it's hard to know where he's going to come out on all that. But in places like Wisconsin and other states, there's more and more momentum, and I think more and more public unrest about the fact that federal government and most states have really not acted, and I think that pressure is just going to build.
Let's go to our callers now. Gene joins us in Richland Center. Gene, hi.
Howdy. Just wanted to make a point that a lot of people forget is that the assault weapons ban is what y'all are looking at doing again. Back in 99, when Columbine happened, those guns were actually banned in 94. So banning is not going to solve the problem. Neither is, I mean, I believe in concealed carry. I think that what Walmart's doing is, I mean, for anybody that is going to be carrying, you should be carrying concealed, because why would you make yourself a target, first and foremost? I mean, that's kind of obvious thing. And then as far as background checks goes, I would say that, honestly, whenever a gun passes from one hand to another, whether it's family or anybody, I do believe that it should go through a store owner. So that way, or a firearms owner, or I'm having a moment there.
But, Gene, I'm going to jump in because you gave us a lot to talk about. We haven't talked much about assault weapon bans so far. Bob, are people talking about that again now?
There is some movement or some discussion about that. There's a congressional committee that just is maybe taking that matter up at the end of September. I would just backtrack a little bit first. Gene makes a real good point that even two private individuals, you know, you have a neighbor, let's say you want to sell a gun to somebody you know, it's simple enough to make the sale, fill out a one-page form, take the form to your local gun dealer, your licensed dealer, who can run the background check. That, in fact, happens to be the law in New York State, where I live, and a few other states have it, but not at the federal level. And in terms of assault weapons ban stuff, there's obviously that's a pretty, you know, that's a further reach for people who want to see stronger gun laws. There is a new study out about the assault weapons ban from 1994 to 2004, the federal law, that actually showed that the use of such weapons declined in crimes during that period of time and then really shot up after 2004, suggesting that it may have actually had some beneficial effect. But, of course, most gun crimes are not committed with assault weapons to begin with, although they are favorites of mass shooters.
Thanks a lot for that call, Gene. And you recently wrote a piece, Bob, on large capacity magazines, basically weapons that can have lots of ammo. You can fire more without reloading. Why did you focus in on that?
Well, the magazines question is important because a magazine is not a weapon. It's an accessory. Now, there are weapons, of course, that cannot operate unless you have a magazine inserted, including so-called assault weapons. And the question then is how big a magazine? And we know, for example, that the Ohio shooter from the beginning of August had a 100-round drum magazine that he used and fired off, killed and wounded a whole bunch of people in the space of 30 seconds before the police stopped him. And you can have all kinds of weaponry, but if you impose stricter limits on magazines, it's a simple thing to do. There are a lot of them out there, to be sure. But, you know, if your basin is filling up with water because you have a broken pipe, first thing you do is turn off the water. If you decide that as a matter of policy, it'd be useful to not have 100-round drum magazines or 40-round magazines floating around, well, you could stop them and then begin the process of preventing future sales, and you can cut back on them over time. And frankly, it's hard to come up with a very good reason why anybody, certainly no sports person or hunter, you know, needs to have a large capacity magazine beyond, say, 10 rounds. And that we know that in actual shooting circumstances, that kind of thing makes a difference.
Thanks again for the call, Gene. We'll go now to David with us in Duluth. David, hi.
Yes, hi. Say, you know, I recently affected by a couple of different suicides that acquaintances from handguns. seems to be a societal problem more than anything right now. But if you look at some of the statistics to the ATF, and the amount of gun-related deaths in the United States has went from 12,000 to 22,000 in just a span of 20 years. And that's kind of correlates to the amount of weapons that were sold. 2007, it was 11.2 million. 2017, 25.2 million handguns. And I would just have to say the proximity of having a handgun available is contributing to probably a lot of suicide deaths.
David, thanks a lot for the call. Bob, I don't have those numbers in front of me, but David, one number that's definitely true, the majority, as I understand it, of firearm deaths are related to suicide.
Yeah, David makes an extremely important point. Annually, there are twice as many gun suicides as there are gun homicides. And that is an alarming and disturbing statistic. And indeed, it is the one element of, you know, harm that guns do, that is gun suicides, that is highly correlated with gun frequency. When there's a lot of guns in an area, the gun suicide rate goes up. And the subject of red flag laws we mentioned earlier, which allows, let's say, a relative or an intimate of a person who owns guns, and if they think that person is either homicidal or makes specific threats or is suicidal, they can go to the police and get a temporary order to have the guns removed, have the person examined, go before a judge, determine whether they should keep their guns or not. And there have already been some studies that have demonstrated that these red flag laws in states where they have existed have produced reductions in suicides in those states. That is a tremendously important point.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Robert Spitzer from the State University of New York at Cortland, author of the book, The Politics of Gun Control, looking at the latest politics of gun control at the state and federal and retail levels. Back to your calls. Phil is with us in Crystal Lake, Illinois. Phil, hello.
Hello. I was just wondering if you could have a show where you talk about the profits the gun industry makes every year and how they spend that money, especially how they spend it with politicians and the effect that has, the lobbying. We're always talking about these things like background checks and magazines and banning a gun. But those things never really happen, and if they do, they're reversed the next time there's a Republican in office. And the money is the basis of the problem.
Phil, thanks for the call. Bob, the economics of the gun industry.
Well, certainly the gun industry is a major contributor, participant along with the NRA and their activities. They do contribute, you know, a lot of money to their causes. Although the gun industry itself is not all that profitable. Part of the problem is what they produce. And I don't mean people being scared of guns. I mean the fact that firearms are a very durable commodity. You know, if a firearm wore out after a year or two, the gun industry's profitability would probably be a lot greater. But, you know, firearms with a minimal degree of care can last for not only years, but decades. As a consequence, they are, you know, looking for other kinds of profits. And that's one reason why they really went all in selling assault weapons in the early 2000s, because the profit margin on assault weapons is greater, and you have a lot of accessories that go with those kinds of weapons. But the money angle is certainly very important. Phil's right.
Thanks a lot for that call. I want to turn to what's going on at the federal level now. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell told conservative talk show host Hugh Hewitt this week that he would bring gun control legislation to the floor if it had President Trump's support. Here's a listen.
If the president took a position on a bill so that we knew we would actually be making a law and not just having serial votes, I'd be happy to put it on the floor. And the administration is in the process of studying what they're prepared to support, if anything.
And as you mentioned earlier, Bob, the president has given mixed signals on various gun-related measures. What are you watching for in Congress?
Well, Senate, of course, is where the focus is, because the House of Representatives has enacted several gun measures already, and they're considering others. I find the quote by Majority Leader McConnell to be kind of sad, and the reason why is not whether he opposes or supports gun laws. It's the fact that he simply is content to say, well, let's see what President Trump says, and that will determine what the United States Senate will do, a co-equal branch of government. And, you know, if he believed in the cause of, you know, supporting that legislation or at least allowing it to come to the floor of the Senate for debate and vote, that would at least be the Senate functioning as an independent branch of government. And the president could then exercise his constitutional power to either sign such legislation or veto it or express his opinion publicly. But to sort of sit back and wait for President Trump to make his decision, who, of course, has gone back and forth and back and forth and back and forth on this issue, I think is just Senator McConnell saying, well, we're not really the United States Senate. We're just kind of an appendage of the sitting president. And I don't care what your party is or your ideology or how you feel about the gun issue. That's not how the branches of government are supposed to operate.
Bob, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
Okay, good to be with you.
That's Robert Spitzer, distinguished service professor and chair of the Political Science Department at the State University of New York at Cortland. He's been following issues of gun control in American politics for many years, written books on the subject. He joins us for a look at the latest at the state level, in the federal government, and what's going on at retail chains, places like Walmart, Kroger, CVS, Walgreens, changing their policies when it comes to open carry of firearms, among other things, in their stores. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, there's a lot of food waste around the world, over a billion tons a year. Our guest shares a plan to cut global food waste in half. As college football season heads into high gear, we'll meet the new director of the UW-Madison Marching Band. He's picking up a whole new piece of a long-running tradition. And it's this week's edition of Food Friday. A cookbook author tells us how to add the deep, rich flavor called umami to any kind of dish, from soup to cake. That's coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.